Welcome, everyone, to the .NET All Access Podcast. I am Chris Shore, and joining me at this time is Jake Barnett, and we are here to review the WWE SmackDown show that aired on August the 19th, 2011, taped on August the 16th in Bakersfield, California. And for those of you who are listening for the first time, Jake and I review this show every week. We cover it live for the site on Friday nights and then usually review it on Saturday morning in audio. Usually that's exclusive to our .NET members, but today bringing you the all-access version. But if you want to hear it next week and continue to hear it after that and have access to just the tons of audio we have available for you on the .NET site, I hear just in the past couple of weeks, Jason Powell has interviewed the Hurricane. Shane Helms had a two-hour interview with him that is very good and certainly worth listening to. Also, WWE Tough Enough contestant Jeremiah Riggs came on and spoke with Jason for about an hour. I recently interviewed the playwright for the elaborate entrance of Chad Deity, a wrestling-themed play. The playwright for that is Christopher Diaz, and he came on and spoke with me for about 45 minutes. And that's not to mention all the other audio we do every week. We do review every WWE and TNA pay-per-view, plus the major shows of the week, WWE Raw and SmackDown, TNA Impact Wrestling. Jason and I each do a Q&A audio where members can ask wrestling and non-wrestling questions for us. And Jake and Will Pruitt get together every Wednesday for the .NET Countdown, a great show where they look at some of the best and some of the worst things in professional wrestling each week. And then on Thursdays, we have our flagship audio show, .NET Weekly, where Jason Powell and I run down the news of the week. We often have first-run news that's not been printed on the site yet. It usually runs at least 90 minutes, and those are on our very, very low news week. Sometimes we can push it as long as three, depending on what all is going on. A lot of fun with those. Very popular show, as is the Countdown, as is all the audio we're doing. So if you want access to that, plus access to the ad-free version of the site and our .NET forum and our .NET members blog section, if you ever want to try writing a blog, we have the blog section there for you guys. Members forum, the ad-free version of the site, all the audio, all of that is available right now at a very special price. Only $5 will give you a month access. That's $2.50 off of the normal monthly price of $7.50. And if you like what you hear, and I'm sure you will, then you can sign up for the annual package. And again, you can get that for $5 a month too, which saves you 50 cents off of our normal annual package. And this is the .NET Summer Sale. If you're interested in signing up and you're listening on iTunes, head on over to ProWrestling.net. And once you're there, or if you're already there, just look on the right-hand side of the page and you'll see the .NET sign-up page, member sign-up page, and you'll have the codes there that you need to plug in to be able to get those summer sales specials. Again, only $5 a month gives you access to everything. Well worth taking, checking it out. And, of course, if you sign up for the annual rate, that will get you through next year's WrestleMania, next year's SummerSlam, and through everything, of course, the rest of this year. So let's go ahead and bring in Jake at this time and break down this SmackDown for the August 19th edition that was taped in Bakersfield, California on the 16th. And Jake, it was a pretty good show. There was there were some good moments or some bad moments, just like any other show that you would have. But I think the one thing that stood out most for me coming out of this show was the complete lack of storyline development for anything other than the World Heavyweight Championship title scene. Mark Henry, of course, won the Battle Royal they had at the end of the show to become the new number one contender. But other than that, I didn't really see any development for anybody else. Did I miss something?
Yeah, I mean, it really wasn't one of those shows. I mean, it was the first show with the start of a five-week build towards the next pay-per-view. And, you know, I think maybe you could call what they did with Natalya advancing her storyline, but other than that, I mean, everything else is just kind of a one-off, just fill some TV time kind of a booking tonight. So, yeah, we definitely did not see the movement towards any other SmackDown angles besides the main event, and maybe a little bit of development for Natty and Beth Phoenix.
Yeah, and this is typical whenever they have 5 weeks of build to the next pay-per-view. They usually take a week or two off. We even saw it with the Royal Rumble, I want to say, this past year, and building to that, it was like, we got 5 weeks, they didn't do anything for 2 or 3 weeks, and they try to cram it all in at the end. So I assume that we're going to start building next week, or at least start getting the hints of building for next week. But yeah, it wasn't as bad as last week's show. We were very critical of last week's show in that seemed to be just chunks. I even said it was like a highlight reel show more than an actual homogenous show that had a logical beginning, middle, and end. It was just like, okay, we'll plug this match and video package in, this match and video package in. They did it like 8 times, and boom, there's your 2 hours. This at least had some sense of flow from start to finish in it, so it was better than last week's in that respect. What do you think we're going to see coming out from here? I mean, obviously, we've not had any real build towards anything. We know that with Mark Henry heading over to the number one contender's position, it appears that his very, very short feud with Sheamus has come to an end. Now, it may end up being a triple threat in the end. We never know exactly how it's going to play out, obviously. But where do you think, Sheamus is sitting out there, Daniel Bryan is sitting out there, Wade Barrett sitting out there, a lot of guys sitting out there, even Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase to some degree kind of sitting out there. I don't necessarily want you to fantasy book, but what do you think we're going to see from SmackDown? Now the title picture seems to be set. What do you think else we're going to see from these guys? Are there any feuds that you felt like coming out of SummerSlam that they were kind of pointing to at this point?
Well, I mean, I would hope to see Daniel Bryan and Wade Barrett continue. I mean, despite how bad the reaction was for their match at SummerSlam, I think that was actually a very good match from a technical standpoint, and I enjoyed the heck out of watching it. So from that perspective, I'd like to see that one continue. The last four guys in the Battle Royal that closed the show were, Henry, Sheamus, Barrett, and Sin Cara. So I think obviously those guys will probably all end up with matches at the next pay-per-view to some degree. Sheamus might move into that triple threat type situation in the main event. I can't see him being moved down the card, considering how strongly he was booked heading into SummerSlam and the way that he lost SummerSlam. So I would definitely expect to see him make a push to get into the main event, and maybe Barrett and Bryan and Sin Cara will find an opponent for the next pay-per-view. Who that is, who knows? They do have that situation out there with, Sin Cara's replacement currently being the one we're seeing on SmackDown, and him coming back from his suspension, so they definitely have ways to go from there. So that's kind of what I see coming from SmackDown on the next pay-per-view.
All right, well, let's look at this show then, and we'll start at the very top. We had the a video package that kind of showed highlights from Randy Orton's title win at SummerSlam. We cut right to the ring where Teddy Long already was, and he introduced Randy Orton, had him come to the ring. I like what you wrote in your report, that they gave each other a kind of a secret handshake. It was kind of funny. Orton seemed kind of disconnected from it as Teddy kept changing the way they were shaking hands and whatnot. And finally gave Orton the mic, and Orton cut just kind of a basic promo. My name is Randy Orton, and I'm not Christian. Christian's been out here whining, and I'm not going to be out here whining. And just kind of buried that feud. I'm not necessarily saying he's buried Christian there, but he kind of buried that feud and made it sound like that's seen his final days. Just kind of said, I'm here and I'm the champion. And let me stop right here, because I was really, this kind of bothered me how it opened, insofar as the only hype we got from Monday night from Raw was Randy Orton returns as the World Heavyweight Champion. And then granted, they did the real screw one where the next one they showed is them saying, who won the World Heavyweight Championship? But twice on Raw, we got the Randy Orton is the SmackDown Champion, or the World Heavyweight Champion on SmackDown. Tune in to see that. And what it's saying to me from those videos, those commercials, and from the way they opened it and what Orton had to say, it seems to me like they're just saying, hey, Randy Orton's on SmackDown, and that's the only reason to tune in. I'm not saying that that's their intent, but that's what they're saying, or am I reading that wrong?
Yeah, I mean, that's really all that they seem to advertise outside of the SmackDown show in and of itself. I mean, they post some articles about other SmackDown superstars to the website, and sometimes other SmackDown wrestlers end up on Raw for cameo appearances or whatnot, but it definitely seems like Randy Orton is the focus of this show, and their advertising definitely doesn't take away from that. I mean, he is the focus, and even when Christian was champion, I mean, most of those advertisements were focused on what Randy Orton was going to do to kick his ass. So I definitely think that this is Orton's show to lose, and it's his show to to give away, and I don't see, you know, based on what we've seen from his performance since he's moved to SmackDown, I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Do you think that's an effective way to get people to tune in, is just by concentrating on him and not the show itself?
Well, I mean, just based on the crowd reactions that he gets, I mean, I definitely think it's not the worst way they could promote the show. But I would hope, you know, if they start getting other people over, that they start getting some of their own advertising time, because I do think they have a lot of talents on SmackDown that are worth seeing, and it's kind of a shame that Orton gets all the billing, and they're kind of just left to hope that they can get some attention while people are watching the show.
Yeah, I think that's my only concern, is that you don't leave yourself a whole lot of, you know, you're not doing anybody else any favors on the card by just concentrating on Orton. But, you know, nevertheless, it's what they did this week, and after Orton put the feud with Christian to rest, he told Teddy Long that he was ready to move on to something new, and so Teddy Long announced a 20-man battle royal to determine the new number one contender, and no sooner had he got it out of his mouth, Cody Rhodes' music hit, he and Ted DiBiase came to the ring. Cody talked about it was like a legacy reunion. He pointed out kind of what their history was on Raw, where they were lackeys to him. He said that, you know, he was, just like Randy, he was now a champion too, but he didn't have to resort to barbarism to win, which I thought was a great line, to win his championship. And then said that he would be in the Battle Royal and would be winning that, and handed the mic to DiBiase. DiBiase started to kind of run down, you know, we know you, Randy, you forget that. We know your strengths, but we know your weaknesses more than anybody. And, you know, you must have forgotten about all the times, and that's as far as he got when Orton just hit RKO out of nowhere. Cody backed up in the corner of the ring. As Orton approached him, he slid out of the ring and hopped to the floor. Orton's music hit. He left the ring. And then Cody just slid right back in the ring and got in Teddy Long's face and demanded that Teddy Long do something about it. Teddy, you know, basically no-sold it and said, well, I'll go in the back and make Orton stand in the corner for on one leg for 10 minutes, and then I'll give him a piece of paper and a pen and demand he write 100 times. I will not, what was it exactly he said?
He said, I will not RKO Ted DiBiase. Yeah,
yeah, I want to RKO Ted DiBiase 100 times. He said, but since they had to do something else, though, since Ted could no longer compete, and so he was going to put Cody in Ted's match instead, and the Intercontinental title would be on the line, and it would be on the line against Ezekiel Jackson, and that match would be next. We kind of broke in the middle of this to talk about Orton, but from just start to finish, I wasn't real impressed with the opening segment. It didn't do anything to set the stage. They announced the 20-man Battle Royal, but that was kind of it for the hype leading into the main event, and then they clumsily gave Zeke his rematch back. I don't understand why they didn't just say, you know, look, you've got your match with Zeke, and it's his rematch, and leave it as that instead of having this thing where they, you know, where it's not like that match was announced, but they had announced Ted DiBiase versus Zeke, then, okay, I understand why you have to kind of make the change that way. But there were no announced matches, and so he acted like he was booking on the fly for something nobody expected to see anyway. I just thought it was the whole segment was flat and bad and devoid of logic.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't do anybody in the ring any favors. I mean, Orton obviously looks strong because he just gets to beat people up, but DiBiase and Rhodes definitely didn't gain anything from that. I don't even think bringing up the whole legacy thing even helped. I mean, most people were so tired of that angle by the time it was over that, you know, resurrecting it wouldn't have done anything for anybody. Sorry about that phone going off.
All right.
So, yeah, I mean, it was a disappointing segment to open the show, just because I don't think it helped anybody. And the way that they booked the rematch for Zeke, Teddy Long doesn't make any sense anyway, and Zeke had already had his rematch last week. I mean, Rhodes had beat him for the title 2 weeks ago. He got a rematch last week. You know, they had an unannounced match with DiBiase that was apparently supposed to take place before the RKO happened, and then he just made it another title match. So, you know, that was Zeke's second rematch, which doesn't even make any sense considering he'd lost two in a row to Rhodes, and then they just kind of left Rhodes in the ring going into the commercial break. So the only person that gained anything out of that whole segment was Orton, and it wasn't much. And, you know, that's never really a good thing, considering the opening segment of, of Raw and SmackDown are typically the highest rated segments of the show.
Yeah, not only was it not much, but he didn't need it either. I mean, he's the guy that's already hot on the show, but that's what they had. And then, of course, after commercial, we had our first match of the night, and it was Zeke losing for the third week in a row to Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes defending the Intercontinental Championship, defeating Ezekiel Jackson at 3 minutes and 37 seconds. I guess what we can say about this, and I put it in my hit, on my hit list specifically for this reason, is that it was better than last week, and, you know, I guess you got to try to find what positive you can, and this one was more entertaining than what we've seen out of these two guys. It wasn't a classic by any stretch of the imagination, but it was, you know, for a 3.5-minute match, it was entertaining. At least I thought. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, they did what they could with the time that they had. It was definitely a lot better than what we saw last week. I mean, that was a longer match. I mean, this basically was the same match they wrestled last week. They just compressed it from, you know, 7 or 8 minutes into 3, and it actually made the match quite a bit better. So I was definitely, you know, impressed with Rhodes here. I mean, Zeke is what he is. I think, you know, he has a lot of work to do in the ring before he could really be considered for another push, in my opinion, just because he's shown that he's limited and that, you know, he can only work with certain people. And I don't think that's a combo that WWE wants, you know, even in the mid-card at this point when they have so much other talent that can go with anybody.
Yeah, there's places you can use him, certainly, but you're going to have to pick your spots with him because he doesn't have that great ability in the ring, to be sure. Backstage, Zack Ryder came up to Teddy Long and said that Alberto Del Rio was on his way, would be there any minute, and that he had agreed to compete, and then Ryder put himself over as winning the Battle Royal later so that he could go on to become the new champion of Zackdown, which I thought was kind of cute. Teddy, you know, said, he goes, well, I asked you to invite the WWE champion. I expected it to be CM Punk or John Cena, and Zack said, you know, that the WWE was just full of surprises, and we got the surprise again, the same crappy porno sax music, and Oksana walked up. Zack Ryder walked away at that point, and they, you know, they just rehashed the same joke from last week. I know your first name's Teddy, as in Teddy Bear, but why is your last name Long? And Teddy, you know, stumbled all over, stammered all over himself, and then she said, "Would you like to watch me with 20 men?" Speaking about the Battle Royal, and Teddy went from inappropriate sexual joke to inappropriate gay sexual joke to just kind of walking off. He goes, I'd rather watch the 20 men. I mean, I'd rather just watch it by myself, and left, and left Oksana standing there to kind of howl. What in the hell are they doing here? I mean, obviously we're getting the retread of Teddy Long's love interest storyline that we had last year or 2 years ago, whatever it was. But I mean, is that all they're doing with this? Is just trying to get him off TV for a while?
Yeah, I'm guessing so. I mean, I can't really see, you know, where this is going right now. I mean, I'm hoping that it's just more than getting a crappy, you know, sexually charged comedy segment on TV every week, because it really isn't that funny. And while, you know, Oksana is a beautiful woman and all, I mean, it's, you know, on a PG show, there's only so far you can push this envelope. And you know, if this is all you're going to do with her, then, you know, what is she going to do when this is over? I mean, it's obvious that she's, you know, she's not going to be a talent they're going to put in the ring, at least not right away, based on what we saw in NXT. So, you know, this is kind of one of those things where you go, where are we going? What, you know, are we really going to retread this storyline from what just felt like less than a year ago? So, you know, I'm not much of a fan of these segments. I wish they could find something better to do, you know, backstage with people that they plan on putting over than having one of these comedy segments that nobody really seems to react to, whether it's in the building or at home. I mean, none of the reviews that I've gotten sent to me via email have been very positive about this either. So, you know, the sooner it's over, the better, in my opinion.
Yeah, they, I mean, you know, Zack Ryder got some TV time, so that's some good there. But other than that, it's kind of like, wow, really, doing this again. And like you said, I found a beautiful woman, and, you know, the accent certainly helps with her sexiness, but if it's PG/PG-13, which is where they tend to be pushing it, at least on the Raw side they're pushing. I don't see it as much on the SmackDown side, but on the Raw side, obviously, they're pushing that envelope a little bit harder. Yeah, there's just only so far you can go with this. And, you know, whatever it is, I hope we get the payoff soon, certainly. We had the Justin Gabriel hype package that we've had for the past couple of weeks about him going home to South Africa and the reception that he got there. It definitely looks like they're trying to give this guy some sort of push going forward. He made his ring entrance after commercial. We had Justin Gabriel defeating Tyson Kidd at 4 minutes and 11 seconds in the second match of the night. And really what I can say about this is much like I put Cody and Zeke in my hits because it was better than the week before, this got into the misses simply because of the match they had on NXT last week was so much better. It was longer. I understand that, you know, many people are not watching NXT. The vast majority of the SmackDown audience is not watching NXT. And that's fine. I understand. And if this is the first that you've seen of these two guys, it was pretty good. But if it's not, if you watch NXT, then this was a big letdown. And my argument to anyone who would defend that would be to say, well, put the 4-minute match on NXT when nobody's watching and put the 12, 15-minute match, whatever it was they had on NXT, on SmackDown and let people see these guys go, because that was a great match. And I thought it did more to build Gabriel as a star because of all the great near falls that they had. While the match was okay, I mean, certainly one of the better matches of the night, it wasn't as crisp, it wasn't as clean as the previous one we had seen, and of course nowhere near as good, simply for no other reason than because of the time constraints. I know you saw the previous match too. What did you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of definitely in the same boat as you. I think I said something similar in my written report last night. But, you know, it's difficult to kind of rate these two guys after watching those two matches because they were so vastly different. I mean, the one on NXT was smooth. You know, these guys really seemed to click together. You know, they had, I'm trying to think, was it, you know, 12 or 15 minutes on NXT, the last match? It was a pretty lengthy match.
Yeah, somewhere in that range.
And, you know, they had to cut this match down to 4 or 5. And I think they tried to keep a lot of the same big spots that were in that NXT match, and they kind of threw them real close together, and so it kind of threw off both of their, you know, equilibriums or something, because there was quite a few spots where they just weren't in the right place, and there was a lot of distance in their strikes. You know, the kicks and punches didn't look like they were even coming close to landing and things like that. So I don't know if just the compressed time frame kind of put them both, at unease, and they weren't able to deliver like they did on NXT, but it definitely was a few notches behind what their other match was, and that's a shame, because I think if they would have just replayed that match, they would have accomplished a lot more here, because it didn't really help either of them, to be honest.
Yeah, it did seem hurried, and like you said, there was a lot of gaps in strikes and kicks, and I think that comes from rushing. I think that's probably a pretty accurate analysis there, that they were trying to squeeze 12, 13 minutes, whatever it was, on NXT down into 4, much like Zeke and Cody did from last week to this week. You take out some of the ref hold stuff in the middle and just kind of go at it. The problem is they were just flying around the ring, and it went for a sloppy match more than anything else. But yeah. As far as Justin Gabriel goes, I mean, they're obviously getting behind this guy. The knock on him for the longest time was that he had no personality. But Jason met him at the bar that he was at after SmackDown was in Minnesota a couple of weeks ago. And he said that he felt that the no personality knock on the guy was not fair, that he, that he thought if he was just allowed to be himself, that he had a chance to probably get over with the crowd, because he seemed to be a nice guy and someone that people could relate to. What we're seeing so far, do you think Justin Gabriel is going to be able to get over with the WWE?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think he has the right look. I mean, he's a handsome guy. You know, if Jason's report on his, personality in person is any indicator, he's definitely a nice person and fun to be around. So, you know, the best characters that WWE produces are the ones that are, you know, amplified, versions of someone's own kind of persona. So, if they can go down that road and just have him, kind of be some kind of version of himself, I think it'll work. If he's definitely, you know, one of the nice guys, you know, the those guys can be, you know, pretty genuine baby faces. So I think there's a lot of upside to Justin Gabriel. And if he can, you know, get a little bit more time in the ring on SmackDown and get more comfortable with his opponents, I think he can deliver some good matches.
Matt Stryker was backstage interviewing Kali and Jinder Mahal. He asked Jinder a question about the 20-man battle royal, and Kali jumped in and said something in Punjabi, and Stryker asked Jinder to translate. Jinder said that Kali said that he was going to win, that Kali was going to beat to win and be the new number one contender. He then said something to Kali in Punjabi and said, "You serve me," and Kali nodded, and Jinder said, "Actually, I am going to win. Kali is in agreement with me. I am going to win the battle royal," and walked off. Stryker stuck the mic in Kali's face again, and Kali shoved it away. This storyline has lost its way. I mean, we were really kind of excited about this when it started, and then it's just it's been just rocked by body blows of bad storytelling from that moment. It started off really good. They had the interaction at the beginning. Kali seemed to, you know, when he hooked up with Jinder initially, it seemed to be, it seemed forced, but it didn't seem like it was a blackmail situation. And then we get the moment from Ranjan Singh on the Titantron where he told the story that I had missed somehow about that it was about Kali's sister, and we had it explained to us it's a cultural situation. It may be, yes, Kali could support her with the money he's making, but it's not the thing. It's more of a cultural situation. If Jinder were to divorce his sister, it would be an insult to the family and whatnot. But Kali seemed to be, you know, doing it with gusto, and now we're kind of seeing just a weak argument against. I don't know. I mean, I really, much like so many things in WWE, this just seems to have lost its way. From a very good start, it's just, I don't know, it's just kind of there and boring and a little bit confusing at this point. You know, do you feel the same way about it?
Yeah, it's very awkward. You know, the whole situation with Kali's sister, you know, it kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, we knew that there was some family conflict there. But we, you know, we've never seen Kali's sister. We don't know her. We, you know, we don't know how Jinder treats her away from TV. So, you know, as somebody who watches the show, it's very difficult to feel sympathy for anybody involved just because we don't, you know, we don't really see the nasty stuff that we're just supposed to assume is happening. And, you know, they haven't really had anybody to feud with. I mean, it feels like they should be feuding with each other just based on their family relationships. But, you know, they really haven't had anybody to act as their foil. You know, there's no real good guy to put them up against that, you know, that would make this feud or, you know, make these characters more interesting. So, so far, it just feels like they've kind of dropped the ball and it's just kind of been sitting on the floor for a couple of months.
Is there anybody on SmackDown currently you think they could have a good feud with?
I don't know. I mean, it's tough. Maybe, you know, Ezekiel Jackson or somebody. You know, somebody who doesn't have much going on, you know, right now, who isn't, you know, really, you know, heading up the card, who, you know, might be able to have a feud because he has the size that would be necessary to kind of fight off a Kali if he was going to be wrestling, you know, Jinder or something along those lines. But they definitely need to find something for some of these guys to do that are in the lower to mid card, because it definitely feels like they aren't getting much attention from the writers recently.
After commercial, we had Ricardo Rodriguez introduced, and he introduced WWE champion Alberto Del Rio, who came out in a Lamborghini. I'm not a car guy, but as much as I am, Lamborghinis are the ones I just drool over, so I was having a really nice moment with that. He came to the ring and cut a promo. He said that Bakersfield was an important place to him because it's where he had defeated Rey Mysterio just a year ago. And then they showed highlights of him defeating Rey Mysterio this past Monday on Raw. They said that he had done it again, and he just put himself over, put down Rey. It was his fallback position on the mic, if he has to just kind of run Rey down. And asked if he said he was a real champion after that, and asked if there was anyone who was man enough to face him. Daniel Bryan's music hit. I realize he just got new music, but the new music doesn't help him any at all. It's not something that, you know, creates a moment whenever it starts off and you can just kind of jump right into it. So just a quick thought on that. He came out with a microphone, and Del Rio said, you want another beatdown? And Brian asked why he thinks he was so special when he cashed in his briefcase on a weak opponent, just like every other Money in the Bank winner had done. he said that Del Rio was pathetic, and then he just kind of stormed to the ring, and we went to commercial. Before we get to their match, I mean, it was just kind of, you know, cut and paste, typical stuff from Del Rio, nothing real spectacular here. He's solid on the mic. Much like Orton in the first segment, it was just kind of, here it is, and you're not really supposed to be impressed by it, but just the same kind of standard stuff. And I thought Brian did a nice job whenever he came down to the ring.
Yeah, I mean, it was really more of the same from Del Rio, but I don't know what we could really expect from him. I mean, he doesn't really have a feud as of right now. I mean, he you know, he beat Mysterio on Monday. He's the unified champion. You know, they haven't really progressed much further than that. So I guess, you know, the default position would be to talk about what happened on Monday, and that's just kind of what ended up happening. But Brian came down, and you know, he showed some intensity, which I mentioned in my report that has been missing before. He didn't have that kind of half goofy look and smile that always seems to come up in his promos, even when he's trying to be serious. And, you know, that's a major step forward, because it definitely made him look like less of a goofball trying to, you know, head down towards the ring to fight a champion. So I thought that was good. You know, and I think you're absolutely right about his music. You know, I'm always a fan of, you know, starting out somebody's music with kind of a heavy guitar riff, and or at least something that's attention grabbing. And his music definitely doesn't do that. I mean, it's just kind of there. So, you know, I think if they're going to continue to experiment with his music, maybe move to something that's a little bit more, you know, immediately recognizable.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about just, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but just to kind of piggyback off of that, there's. If you think about the entrance music that you just fly off the chair for, it's the, you know, the You Think You Know Me from Edge, the Awesome from Miz, that guitar riff at the front of Triple H's, the drums at the beginning of Shawn Michaels, for example. You know, I think that there should be some sort of moment right when it hits, either somebody, you know, one of them speaking or someone speaking, or, you know, a definitive something is about to happen. Here's the flag in the ground, and it makes you look towards the ring or towards the entrance ramp. This one just kind of, I mean, even, that's where I really noticed it was he was, you know, is anyone man enough? And then we get this kind of tick, 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 weird. I don't even know what it is at the beginning of his song, and then the music just starts. And I was like, whoa, that doesn't do him any justice at all. He needs a little help there. But after the commercial, we had our second match of the night, Alberto Del Rio defeating Daniel Bryan in 15 minutes and 35 seconds. Of course, it was a non-title match. And, you know, this, two things to say about this match. One is we had this from them last week. It was only like 3.5 minutes last week, and our complaint last week was that they did not have time to go, and this week they did have time to go, and we got exactly what we thought we would get if they were given time to go. It was just a great television match, a lot of fun. Watching these guys work, you see how much of a star Del Rio is in the ring, how much, you know, I think a lot of people tend to forget that he wrestled under a mask for a decade, and to be able to come out and sell with his face like he does from a guy who has always had to sell differently, and granted, he's been doing this for a year now, and so it's not as impressive maybe as it was a year ago, but I still think he just makes people look good in the ring. He made Mysterio look good Monday. You know, he made Bryan look good here tonight, even in defense, or in a loss for Daniel Bryan. But the second thing is that there was so much distraction from this match with the idiot announcers arguing with Cole still hating on Daniel Bryan, dating back to NXT Season 1, and D. Bryan being in Booker T's Fade 5. I've gotten to where I can mostly tune them out, but every once in a while they kind of get in my ear and they stay there, and it happened during this match. And as good as this match was, for me, it suffered because of those idiots on the headset. I don't know what it's going to take to get WWE to realize how bad they're announcing it right now.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. It's gotten to the point where I just kind of tune them out. I mean, I kind of catch bits and phrases if they catch my ear. But for the most part, I try not to pay much attention to what the announcers are saying, just because it's so predictable and it's so scripted. You know, Booker T's constantly talking about the same stuff over and over again. You know, every week, no matter, you know, who it is. He's got his canned phrases for each guy that comes out, and you know what to expect. And Cole, in a lot of ways, is the same way. And he still vacillates between his trying to be a serious play-by-play guy to kind of running down the superstars he does like, and then overreacting when the superstars he does like. Comes down to the ring. So, it's difficult for me to get into any of the WWE announcing as long as, Booker and Cole are involved. Even on Monday with Jim Ross, it's still kind of a struggle at times to sift through, what the kind of yammering that happens in the three-man booth to kind of find the nuggets where JR is able to put people over because they're few and far in between. So, they definitely need to solve this soon because it's taken away from their broadcast in a big way.
Did you say vacillate? What a great word.
Yeah. Big word.
but as far as the match itself, what did it say?
I enjoyed the hell out of the match, and I think it was exactly what we said would happen last week. My only regret is that we didn't see it on pay-per-view, and it wasn't for any kind of title, because I think, these two could have a major feud down the road if they're able to, put this together for TV. I can only imagine what they could put together for a pay-per-view match. Because it definitely didn't feel like these guys really turned it up all the way until maybe the last minute or two. So I think there's a lot of headroom for these two in the ring. I think they could take it up even another notch from what we saw last night and deliver something really special. So hopefully we see that on pay-per-view someday, because this was a lot of fun for a TV match.
Yeah, it really was. I would love to see these two just go hard one time, like you said, for a title where you just expect them to go out there and go about 20 minutes and try to kill each other. You could watch the running knee from the apron, and you see that Del Rio just takes it full on in the mush. I mean, these two guys went out there and flat worked hard, and it was great. We did get a cross arm breaker for the finish with Daniel Bryan tapping out in the middle of the ring after he had just locked. He kind of did like a tilt-a-whirl, spin around like he was going to do a flying head scissor type thing, but spun it around and ended up hooking on the guillotine choke.
Nice transition in that move. I forgot to mention that, but that was really nice.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a head scissor, and when he came around and hooked it, I was like, ooh, that was a neat way to get into that. Good job. And then he drove it back in the turnbuckle and ended up slapping on the cross arm breaker, and Bryan tapped out in the middle of the ring. He went back to it, stomped on the arm a couple of times, and locked it back in the corner again. Sin Cara ran out and made the save and chased off Del Rio. He did hit the big, and this was, of course, new Sin Cara, Unico Sin Cara. He did hit the big crossbody off of the top rope onto the floor. Not as impressive as the Mystico version of Sin Cara, but still, he got a lot of air there. Del Rio took that one like a champ, too. I can't get over how good Del Rio is. To me, he is the beginnings of the south of the border version of Ric Flair. I think he has all that much swagger, that much ability on the microphone, that much ability to get people to hate him for all of the same reasons that Flair was able to. I really think that he is something special. Somebody's going to be around for a long time. But he did take off with Ricardo Rodriguez, La Sin Cara. Checked on Daniel Bryan at ringside. And this is kind of my only problem with having, especially the champion come over from Raw, is that it kind of implies something there with Sin Cara coming out and making the save, but there's no reason to believe we're going to get Sin Cara and Del Rio anytime soon because they're still on separate brands, and Del Rio is the champion and has John Cena breathing down his neck on Raw. So it's kind of a problem having guys come over. What about you?
I think it kind of plants the seeds for the future. I mean, I definitely think, WWE has that tour of Mexico coming up, so, there definitely is an opportunity for them to put together something. If they had Del Rio and Mystico Sin Cara main eventing a Raw in Mexico City, that place would sell out in about 3 seconds. So, just planting a seed like that is enough to set it up for the future. So I wasn't as bothered by it. Maybe as you were, but going back to the finish of the match with Bryan tapping out to the cross arm breaker, I think it's important to mention just how well they focused on the arm throughout the match that made that finish seem really logical for Bryan to tap out, because I think a lot of the times when you have guys who work submissions in WWE, it's kind of a strange thing where they don't work any of they don't isolate the limbs throughout the match, or submissions seem to come out of nowhere and guys are tapping within 3 or 4 seconds. So I thought the way they closed this match out was pretty good.
You mean like the STF?
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's nothing planted early in the match to make you think that somebody should tap out to a submission, within a couple of seconds, like often happens in WWE.
Yeah, and again, with given more time this time, you know, last week when they did this, they had to do it based upon supposedly off of that suicide dive that Brian does. He hurt his arm, and that's what they went through. This time they were able to, you know, do several moves. I remember at one point they did the kind of arm breaker across the knees off of the top rope for those two guys, and, you know, Del Rio got a chance to work it and really, you know, create some psychology to go to that point. So good point by you there about them building to that moment instead of just, oh, there's the arm breaker handicap now. So we had Matt Stryker backstage interviewing Mark Henry. They showed still images of Henry putting Sheamus through the barricade or the retaining wall during SummerSlam. Stryker asked Henry about being in the Battle Royal, and Henry said he should already be number one. His thoughts were that he was getting no respect. He had taken out Big Show. He had taken out Kane. He put Sheamus through a wall, and yet he was still being treated like everyone else. And they were all going to be in the same boat in the Battle Royal. They said he was going to toss 19 men overboard, and they were all going to sink. It's not my favorite promo that he's done over the past couple of weeks. There are certainly ones I can point to that were better. But Mark Henry just out of nowhere, solid on the microphone, making me want to watch him.
Yeah, it wasn't anything, you know, spectacular that you're going to remember, you know, a month from now. But it definitely got the point across for the Battle Royal. And you know, he hasn't – Mark Henry, deceptively good on the mic lately. He hasn't done anything to expose, you know, his character is ridiculous. He just goes out there and says, I'm going to kick everybody's ass and there's nothing they can do about it. And that's basically exactly what you want from a monster heel. So another well-done segment for him.
Absolutely. After a commercial, we had Kelly Kelly and AJ defeating Natalya and Alicia Fox, 4 minutes and 26 seconds, third match of the night. The finish came, it was kind of a weird, they had to work at it a little bit finish. At least I thought like they kind of forced it to the end. Alicia Fox missed the, Natty had to go get AJ and throw her to the floor and then go after her, and everybody just kind of waited until that happened, and then Alicia went for the axe kick, missed it. Kelly Kelly hit her finisher for the win. Either Kelly Kelly doesn't know where the hard cam is and did it with her back to the hard cam for that reason, or she knows exactly where it is and did it so we would see her ass as opposed to her face. Not exactly the best way to be considered a legitimate person in the ring or a legitimate wrestler if you're doing things for TNA. So whatever the reason was, she did it backwards. She did it to the opposite of the hard camera, which I thought was kind of bizarre. And then post-match, Alicia and Natty argued as they started to leave the ring. Natty knocked Alicia to the floor and put the sharpshooter on her and left her screaming there. You know, like you said, I guess there's some continuance here of the Natalya storyline. The only thing they really did to continue it was the announcers saying, at least in my opinion, was the announcer saying, well, eventually Natty's going to have to back up what she's saying. I don't understand what they're doing with this. They had a real hot moment over the course of a week with both Beth Phoenix's attack on Kelly Kelly and Natty's attack on AJ. Then they kind of put them together, and now they're just in a holding pattern that doesn't make any sense. And the match was okay. I mean, it's certainly better than what we saw, you know, months ago, but I wasn't impressed by the match. I wasn't impressed by the post-match stuff. I just feel like this story's still stuck in neutral.
Yeah, I mean, there was just, you know, maybe a tiny bit of, you know, development with Natalya. But, yeah, you're mostly right. It came from the announce team and not necessarily, her actions. I mean, we've seen her attack Divas before, within the last couple of weeks, so it didn't really feel like anything new or different. But, the match itself, I didn't really feel like it had much action. I mean, there was a lot of rest holds. There was just a lot of basic striking. And, you know, then it all kind of fell apart at the end with, everybody ending up in the ring. And that was pretty much the end of it. And so, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot to talk about here, really. I mean, it was pretty basic, nothing special. I'm surprised we didn't see you know, Beth Phoenix on the show, you know, to be with Natalya. I guess they're not worried about continuity there, but it definitely didn't feel like we saw anything major in regards to the Divas, and it's kind of, I'm just wondering if it has anything to do with, you know, oh, we have a 5-week build till SummerSlam, we can't, you know, run this out there now, and because we only have a couple of weeks worth of material. So I think they're just kind of in the holding pattern until they can actually start up this angle and make it appear like they had something planned all along heading to the next pay-per-view.
They're sitting in neutral, and we've talked about it. Like, I think you're probably right. It's just that 5-week build. They usually take a week or two off, and that's what we were getting here from this show. We had the SummerSlam video that they played where they showed all the different things that they did during the week of SummerSlam, which, of course, has the councilwoman in L.A. talking about how damaging bullying is for the bully, which is the moment where I just start screaming at the television because it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. Randy Orton's music hit. He came to the ring or to the announce booth and joined for commentary for the final match of the night, which was Mark Henry winning the number one contender's Battle Royal in 17 minutes and 16 seconds. They did all the spots you expect to do with your standard Battle Royal type fare. They teamed up to get Kali out. And of course that didn't work. And finally Henry was able to toss Kali out. Well, our final four in the match were Sheamus, Sin Cara, Wade Barrett, and Mark Henry. And then that got down to Sin Cara and Mark Henry. Henry kind of no-sold some of Sin Cara's moves to prove how powerful he was. The Hurricane Rana specifically was one where Henry was just kind of looking at him like, are you kidding me? He ended up hitting the world's strongest slam and then gorilla pressing Sin Cara and tossing him out of the ring to win. He went to ringside afterwards, and he and Orton just had a stare down and jawed at each other. And then Henry said something about Orton said he smelled fear on Orton. And that was how we left the show. There's nothing really to complain about with the Battle Royal. It was a Battle Royal. It was what you would expect it to be. It was just kind of a mess. And then we had some nice moments at the end. And like you said, it certainly looks like Wade Barrett is finally getting the push that he deserves because he was one of the final four. Sheamus was there as well. They may go back to those two guys. There's no real clear indication of where they're going coming out of this. I was hoping that they would use the Battle Royal to kind of set up some of these feuds, but it's not clear from coming out of it that there's anybody in particular, any two people in particular that you can expect to see against each other going forward. But Battle Royals are fun for live fans. They get a chance to kind of see everybody in the ring and pound on each other. And they're not great to watch on TV necessarily, but certainly fun for the live crowd. And I was okay with this, and I'm certainly okay with Mark Henry being the number one contender.
Yeah, I wasn't upset about anything in the match. I thought, you know, well, this is a Battle Royal. This is kind of what you expect. And we got pretty much, you know, no focus on any particular wrestler. I mean, you know, Henry kind of rolled out to the outside mid-match and then started beating the crap out of everybody that got eliminated, which, you know, kept the camera focused on him throughout the match, even when, the action in the ring was kind of getting slow and dull, as most Battle Royals do. So I thought that was an effective use of Mark Henry's time out there. And, you know, when it got down to the final four, you know, pretty typical WWE Battle Royal kind of finish where, you know, we have two guys, they kind of pair off, and then, you know, one guy will end up kind of getting eliminated. And then Henry got the elimination on Sheamus and Sin Cara to close, and you know, it was pretty typical. I mean, nothing to complain about there. And then the post-match was good, in my opinion, because, you know, Henry went down to the outside and stared down Orton and told him he smelled fear. And Orton had that kind of look on his face like he didn't have entirely as much confidence as he did going into facing Christian, which I think is good because, you know, Orton needs to have these kind of crises of confidence in order to make his character a little bit more dynamic, because it seems like he just goes out there and says he's going to do something and then, you know, it's booked to do it. So anytime you can kind of throw a wrench into those works and make the result seem less than clear, I think that's a good thing for main event feuds.
Yeah, I think we're looking at a good feud setup here with Henry and Randy Orton, and I think they can do a lot of fun with it, a lot of good with it over the next couple of weeks. But they can screw this up, too. I mean, if he goes out there and just destroys Henry like he had with Christian quite a few times leading up into their pay-per-view matches, I mean, they can screw this up. I don't get the sense that they're going to do that, but they, you know, they have in the past, and they certainly can do that sort of thing again. We've seen good matches out of Henry in the past couple of months, and I mean, had a good match with Big Show, had a surprisingly good match with Kane, had a very good match with Sheamus with a really lousy finish, but that's not his fault. That's just the way it was booked. I know you think that you know, Henry's been your favorite guy certainly over the past couple of months, and you know, he's been a lot of fun to watch and done a lot of good. But are you disappointed that they got away from he and Sheamus so quickly, even though the result of that was that he's now in the main event?
Yeah, I mean, I was hoping to see them stretch that out, and you know, this match at the pay-per-view could very well end up being a triple threat, which you know, that could, you know, kind of breathe a little bit more life into this feud, because I think they can get a couple months out of these three guys in different, you know, various ways, shapes, and forms. So, you know, I think that could be a little bit more dynamic main event. Ever since all three of these guys moved over from Raw, they've kind of been the kind of hovering around that main event. So I would not be surprised to see Sheamus get involved here, just because of, you know, how they're, the match between Sheamus and Henry ended at the pay-per-view, and you know, Sheamus would make a good face for these, you know, to kind of add to this whole works, because Orton's kind of that tweener character, and Henry is the definitive heel on the show. So I think adding a true babyface to the feud could actually benefit in a big way.
Do you think this feud is harmed just out of the gate by the fact that Christian just won the championship and Orton just won it back? In that it points to him probably not dropping the title again so quickly to Mark Henry, and therefore kind of giving away the finish.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, WWE kind of goes in spurts with title changes. You know, they have, you know, 3 in 3 months, and then they won't have any for 6 months. So it really does depend on how confident they are in Orton, that Orton can carry the show. I don't expect Orton at any point to slip out of that title hunt, whether he's holding it or, you know, chasing after whoever's champion at the time. So, you know, I would expect that you're probably right, that we're not going to see a title change right away, which is why I think that that triple threat makes even more sense, because you can have, you know, Orton pin one or the other and still have a feud coming out of it. So that's what I expect to see at the next pay-per-view, to be honest.
Give the show a grade, or a rate, say, A, B, C, D, F. What would you rate this show?
You know, just based on the... I mean, we had some good matches, but we didn't... Like we said, to open the show, we didn't we didn't have a whole lot of storyline progression, so I don't think you can give it much more than a, you know, C-plus or B-minus at the maximum.
Yeah, I'd give it a straight up C. I mean, C stands for average, and that's what we had, kind of an average show. It wasn't anything to get up and run around the room about, either because it was good or because it was bad. We had matches that were worth sitting through, certainly. If you haven't seen the Daniel Bryan and Alberto Del Rio match, I'm sure Jake would agree with me, go out of your way to see that. I've posted by the time you're hearing this, the video for SmackDown on YouTube will be up on the site, so you guys can watch it there. Skip ahead if you wanted to see that match. Gabriel and Tyson Kidd's worth sitting through if you want to check that out. If you didn't get a chance to see their NXT match, no, I would recommend it. It is on the YouTube channel as well. I would go back and watch that match. But there's not a lot to talk about as far as news coming out of the show, not a newsworthy show in the lead. Very, very minor progressions of storylines. The only thing we really had, again, was in the main event. And so, yeah, I would give it a C. Anything else you want to add about the show or any of the matches on the show?
Just that if people are going to kind of fly through the show on YouTube and skip ahead, make sure you watch the 450 at the end of the Gabriel and Kid match, because I think he might have jumped about 20 feet. It was a pretty impressive 450.
Yeah, he's been here recently. He's been doing them where he's, you know, usually you see him very, very up tight, close to the corner. And it's more of a kind of an up and down move. He seems to be getting a little more air and flying out closer to the center of the ring from here recently. So, yeah, definitely check that out. I think good things coming from Jason Gabriel in the very near future. But that is all we have for the SmackDown audio review. Again, thank you guys so much for listening. And if you like what you hear, I cannot stress it enough, you're not going to get a better deal than you're getting right now. Jason has put on a great sale. Save you $250 a month if you want to check it out. Have access to this audio, all the other audios we have on the site, the interviews, all the audio we've ever done is up there. There's interviews on there with Chris Jericho, lots of the formerly creative guys who used to be creative members in WWE. Definitely go back, check all that stuff out for your dollars. Check out the .NET members forum. Got a good group of guys there who post. We're always looking to add to that. Once your chance to write a blog, the .NET members blog section is your place to do that. And, of course, access to the ad-free version of the site and all the breaking news that we get. Jason will be back on Monday to take the site back over. And so those of you guys who read regularly, thank you for putting up with me for the past few days. It's always fun whenever I've got my hands on the helm, and I'm happy to do it. Again, if you're interested in signing up and getting access to all the things that the members get for just $5 a month, head over to ProWrestling.net. There on the right-hand side, you will see the sign-up page. Both codes you need for just a single-month sign-up and for the annual fee lock you in at $5 for a year. Save you $2.50 off of the monthly rate, 50 cents a month off of the annual rate. But, hey, that breaks out to $6 whenever you look at it. And just because of Jason, I'll say that I give you a chance to go get you a $5 sub and maybe meet Jared from Subway, including tax. So, thank you guys for listening. Thank you, as always, for your continued support of ProWrestling.net. Check out the Summer Sale Special if you're not already a member. Everyone else, have a great weekend and take care.